Hello, you're listening to Me and Paranormal You with your host, Ryan Singer. Because it's more fun to believe.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to another experience of Me and Paranormal You. This is going to be a fun one today. This goes, I think our relationship goes back to crystal shopping at a comedy festival.
It was Boise? No, it wasn't Boise.
It was Cromfest? Cromfest.
It was Crom. That's
in
right.
In the Midwest, but it was the Cromfest in Omaha?
Omaha. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah, that was, so that's where Dash and I first met each other. Dash Kwiatkowski is on the program. We're going to talk about all kinds of stuff today. And I'm pretty sure I got the pronunciation of your last name correct.
Yeah.
Or close
Kwiatkowski,
to it.
Okay. I'll tell you, you know, being introduced on stages for 10 years, I don't care how people do it anymore.
Yeah.
I think there was a moment where I was like, actually it's Kwiatkowski, and I'm very well past that.
Okay. You know, I was born into a last name that is pretty easy because it's just a noun. Singer, so like it's like what people so many people are used to singing, but every once in a while people will be like, what was the last name? And I'll be like, oh, you know, like a singer. And they're like, oh, okay, you know, like it's almost too easy for some people to like think like I must have gotten this incorrect. But so we're going to talk about all kinds of things today that that we don't even know about yet, probably, about where the conversation's going to go. I'm trying to think what year that was. We were, that was probably like 7 years ago.
It's gotta be something like that. Yeah. I think so. Because I think I had just started. I think I was just in that, like, apply to every festival, do every festival mode. And then that mode, you know, altered as I did more of them. And I was like, okay, well, I'll do some of the festivals now. I will apply to occasional festivals. But yeah, I was going all over the place in the country. And I remember, it was either on a group message or in the Facebook group. I think you would put a thing out. I was like, hey, we're going out looking for crystals. Who wants to come? And I was like, that actually sounds extremely cool. Let's do it.
Yeah, I still own and use the tarot deck I bought. That was the first time I ever bought a tarot deck.
Very
was at that
cool.
crystal shop. The lost the lost tarot of Nostradamus is what it was called. Pretty cool deck. I can't remember if I may have picked up a crystal or two there, because I think I was into crystals, obviously, at the time. But yeah, I was still kind of in like the early stages of my love of crystals. Yeah. And, you know, and I think I don't know where you are now, but I'd be interested to find out when it comes to like my love and my I think belief is always kind of a sliding scale.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. And I think that's maybe a dirty little secret about believing in things that we don't, that no one ever really wants to talk about, is that we ebb and flow in our belief in the efficacy or the effectiveness of certain things. And crystals are definitely that way for me. Sometimes I'm like so into them, like I need these crystals before I go do something.
Yeah.
And then other times I'm like, I'm halfway out the house and I'm like, oh, I don't have my pocket rocks, and I'm like, oh, I'll be fine.
You know, I think for me, it's a thing, and this is sort of like, I think the more I get into just like anything that I would, you know, put under the sort of the broad umbrella of paranormal or whatever, I think everything, the further I get into it, the more I think so much of it is just intentionality. I think so much of it, like I've got an obsidian gem on this, and it's a protection one, and I like it, and it's meaningful to me. Now, you know, am I saying that I genuinely believe that this thing on my wrist is gonna stop anything by virtue of itself or by virtue of just existing? I don't know. I can't say no, but I don't know if that's what I'm buying into so much as it is my belief and my enjoyment, my excitement about this thing that I get to wear that has meaning for me. Is I feel like it's sort of like a symbiotic thing. It's the thing itself and also the sort of the intentionality behind it. And I think I almost think you can't have one without the other. Maybe you can. I don't know anything about anything, but that's sort of where I tend to land on it, I think.
No, I love that. I love that perspective. And because it really lines up, and I don't love it just because it lines up with what I believe, but yeah, although, you know, probably, let's be honest, that's probably a part of it. But the idea too, because people will be like, oh, you think crystals really work? And I'm like, listen, worst case scenario, they're friendly reminders to me about things I want to keep in mind.
Absolutely.
That I want to, you know, be focused on and have intention about. And
yeah.
And, you know, I'm definitely down that rabbit hole of, you know, thoughts create reality.
Totally.
And, you know, what we consume, you know, they say, you know, you are what you eat. Well, yeah, it's that way too, when it comes to emotions and thoughts and mentality. And that's why I think the last 4 years have been so difficult for so many people.
Absolutely.
You know, there's obvious tangible reasons as well, but when it comes to the consumption of what are you mentally eating on a day, what's your diet consist of every day? And if you're not careful, if we're all not careful, we can just become really unhealthy.
Totally.
And I've been there. I still get there sometimes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But the hair looks great, by the way, right now. And patrons can see the hair. The hair looks great. I've always wanted to go like full fledged mohawk.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and I've never, I guess right now would be the best time in the world to do it. Cause it's not like I have to go anywhere or do anything.
Well, so I've gone the mullet hawk angle where it's long in the back.
Nice.
It's short up front. I do. This has been the queers. We've taken it back. We've taken the mullet. It does belong to us now.
So if you're a straight person, apply for a waiver.
You need to get sort of like co-signers or like people to sign off on your mullet hawk terms of service.
That's so funny. I'm curious when it comes to like, what's the size of the crystal collection you've got now? Did you like end up going like, have you been all in on this?
Not super big, honestly. And I think there's sort of the way that I do things. I think I will fixate on a single thing. I will fixate on like a single element that I think is meaningful to me. And I'll have that. So I had like, for the last couple of years, I had a little tiger's eye one. And that had been connected to a fundraiser I was doing at the time, and sort of like for the luck and the financial luck there, to sort of really hoping this fundraiser was for an ex of mine and a surgery that he needed. And so that had been attached to that, and like that was meaningful, and the fundraiser was successful. And then that sort of that tiger's eye, I think, sort of came to mean a luck thing for me as well, because it was sort of like, okay, well, this was attached to a successful endeavor. And I held on to that for a while. And I honestly, I don't know where it went. I feel like these sorts of things are very like transient in my life. So I don't have a big collection of things. I think right now, so like, you know, I showed you the obsidian one, that's sort of like the one for me in this moment. And I think, cause I definitely, I know that if I let myself go like full collector, like, I mean, I've got a big Pokemon tattoo. If there's anything, you know, I have a collecting mentality from a lot of stuff. And if I let myself go full collector, I think with something, I when it comes to like little tokens or little sort of emblems or talismans or whatever, I think the way that my brain sort of works, I like having a smaller assortment of more meaningful ones. So like this, you know, this bracelet, very meaningful. I'm looking at like, there's one specific candle that I'm like, this is my candle. This is the candle that if I'm anointing it with like the little anointing oils, that's where I'm going for. That's this candle. I just anointed it for a friend of mine who's worried about some illness stuff. I was like, all right, we're anointing the candle. That's like my specific one, my specific thing. I just very recently, I was talking to you about this a little bit ago, just got my spirit box from the internet. Very excited. Haven't used it yet. That I don't want to use it in the house where I, do you know what I mean? I don't want to like,
I 100% understand that. I have never used my spirit box in my own apartment.
Yeah. That's, I'm trying to steer clear of that. The closest I've come to doing anything like that is me and my, so I can't remember if I've told you about my sort of vaguely tongue-in-cheek psychic podcast that I do?
No.
So it's called Psychic Friends with a Z at the end. Basically, the long story of how I got into this podcast is I'm in a lot of conspiracy theory Facebook groups just to observe, because I love a flat earth Facebook group because it's fun. That got me into a whole genre of Facebook groups that are psychic advice Facebook groups. There's a ton of like psychic advice Facebook groups.
And oh, for a second, this... I thought, I'm sorry to interrupt. For a second, thought you said psychic and vice.
Oh,
I was like, what are these groups?
No, okay, yeah, I mean, no, that psychic, sounds incredible.
Yeah, doesn't it? Psychic advice. Okay, so psychic advice Facebook groups.
And I'm sitting and I'm watching, and I feel like there are some people in these Facebook groups that are, genuinely trying to help. But then a lot of them just feel like either they're trying to get money out of someone, or just a lot of it feels very... It just feels a little, a lot of the people who purport to be psychics in these groups feel very scammy. Now, I have always been proud of sort of my intuition, and whether you want to say that's beyond, you know, whether is that a trauma response from childhood? Is my trauma response from childhood something that has given me a greater access to understanding sort of first impressions of people? Who knows? Who knows how, you know, psychological versus paranormal versus some mixture of the two, no idea. But I feel very good about my intuition. And my friend Rosa Escandon, New York comedian, really funny. She has occasional, like, I'm going to say prophetic dreams in a sort of a very mundane sort of way that's very fun. And so we're like, all right, well, we don't really trust the psychics in this Facebook group. We're going to do a podcast where we try to answer these questions ourselves. So we try to give psychic advice on the podcast to the people who are asking questions in these Facebook groups. But Rosa and I did a special where we took a Ouija board in my old apartment where I was living. So we took a Ouija board, which, you know, it's a toy made by a toy company, but again, intentionality, right? And I think we went a little bit overboard in terms of the safety precautions. Like we did a very thick salt circle. We did a lot of protection stuff. And there was a point where the thing was moving, but it only kept going just to the letter S. And we're like, what does that mean? Just keeps going to the letter S. And then afterwards, I was like, oh, it's salt. It was too much salt. We put too much salt. Like, we put so much of a wall up that literally nothing could get through. But I was like, all right, now I'm not going to do stuff like that in the place where I live. I'll go out in the field. I'll go out in the world, which is a little harder because of COVID stuff now. But I think that's the goal. But what I was saying is the spirit box feels like another sort of like talisman-y sort of thing to me. Like, this is a piece of technology I'm very excited about. I'm very excited for potentially what sort of doors or experiences this is going to open up for me. And I feel like having like a few things is really where sort of the way that I like to sort of experience this.
That's your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Not being overburdened by the material aspect of whatever,
yeah, I think so.
You know, belief and, you know, feeling you have. I can totally relate to the collector.
Yeah.
That you speak of. I rediscovered my love of baseball cards going through a couple bins at my dad's house when I was in Ohio just a few months ago.
Yeah.
And wow, I was like blown away. I didn't think I had that many. And then I found some ones that were pretty good cards that, you know, 10-year-old Ryan must have known, like, these are going to be worth money someday. So I had them in protective cases and all this.
That's
kind of
awesome.
Stuff. And it's totally, I have to be careful because it's like, yeah, totally exploded my, but it's also something that I realized I haven't had a hobby in my life, which has been missing for me for a really long time. And because maybe it's the nature of what we do as entertainers.
Totally.
But, you know, because we have, you know, the business people, the showbiz people, and even a part of ourselves, you know, once we realize, oh, this is something I really love, then it becomes, well, how can we monetize it?
Totally.
You know, I could do a podcast about this thing, or, you know, because I mean, that's kind of what happened with the paranormal for me.
Yeah.
It was something I just really loved. And then it became, I was like, you know what? I want to find more answers. And totally. So I started doing the podcast. And then, you know, and here we are almost 7 years later. But the idea that I can be too bogged down by, you know, and it's like I'm focusing on the wrong aspect of this.
Totally.
Which can be problematic, but I am very excited. Like, I've got an app I've been working on.
Oh, that's cool.
A crystal identification app.
Oh, that's great.
That's really cool. Yeah. Hopefully come out in, you know, early next year. We've been working on it for a little over a year, but yeah, I'll definitely let you know. We're really excited about it. But the idea that intentionality,
yeah,
can be tied into, you know, tools,
yes,
such as crystals, mm-hmm, or talismans, sigils, all kinds of things, is really fascinating to me. And there is something about harnessing the power of the universe, right?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what really like resonates with me, especially lately when I think about all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's the connectivity of all things and all people, and how maybe I'm starting to realize there's no separation between me and anything, let alone anyone else. Right. Yeah. Do you find yourself ever having periods of time? We were talking about the scale of belief going up and down. I'm curious if you find yourself ever detached from like the anchor of this belief that you have, and you know, focusing on intentionality and things like that.
Yeah. You know, it's hard. I feel like I've just sort of been all over the place in terms of my life and sort of where I believe. And I think back to like, you know, you were talking about harnessing the power of the universe. You know, when I was a kid and I had a sort of, you know, I have a mom with all sorts of issues that, you know, we don't have to go into. But in terms of, you know, it's unsteady childhood, I will say, is what I had. But one of the things, she's very, you know, very like, very bootstrap, self-help, Tony Robbins, all this stuff, right? And so that's a lot of how I was raised. And I remember specifically, I was 13 years old, and I was going to class, or maybe I was 14, whatever the case is. I remember waking up, and I used to have to do this like manifesting exercise where I would write down a thing I wanted to happen 10 times on a piece of paper that day. And this was a thing that my mom was like, you have to do this, which, like, not against it, but, you know, in terms of how I'm not raising kids for a reason, because I don't know what I would do anyway. So I had to do this thing. And I remember I was like, all right, well, I want this specific teacher to cancel homework today. And I wrote 10 times, this teacher is going to say no homework today. And I went to class, and I remember at the end of the class, the teacher, he was like, oh, and homework, oh, you know what? No homework today. And I was like, mind blown. Like, oh my God, I did this, right? Was it a coincidence? Maybe. Was it some sort of manifesting, whatever? Maybe, who knows? And so I was like, I have to do this again. And I did it like a couple days later, and it happened again. And I was like, I have unlimited power. But then things like that, they go away, right? And you don't, and I don't know if it's growing up, or I don't know if it's, you know, the world or what, but I think it's not this idea that I can make things happen by writing them down. You know, I'm not the Death Note or whatever, but I think it's this idea of having an open enough mind to try stuff. And I think that varies. And that's where I'm finding myself for the first time in a number of years, sort of back at again right now. You know, I went through, you know, I'm currently 9 years free of cocaine and alcohol. And right after I got sober, I was like, well, I need to become a Christian now or something, I guess. And so I started going to a church. I started going to this church, and I had a whole experience where I played in the church band, which people who know me, it's like, what even? But
what instrument? I
play guitar, and I sang all the high notes. yeah, but it was a thing where I was like, I'm ready to buy into something. And it's actually around then that I had my first sort of really big, and I didn't have the language for it at the time. At the time I was like, God is talking to me. And now I would say, oh, it's like a synchronicity, right? So I'm going to this church, and as I'm going, the more I realize that this church is purporting to be very progressive and purporting to be very social justice oriented, but it's not. And when you start peeling the layers back, it's, you know, it's a anti-gay marriage church, and it's all these things, but they hide it in the details. And I realized, like, oh, they just want a very alternative presenting queer person in their church because it makes them look more diverse. And I realized that's sort of the role that they had imagined for me. And so I was struggling with that, and I was struggling with a romantic relationship that was unhealthy and not very good. And all of those, you know, I remember I was walking through the Mission District of San Francisco, and I was struggling with belief. You know, I was struggling with this idea of like, what do I believe in? Do I, you know, believe if there is this God, right, this Christian God, who doesn't want me to be myself, like, what do I believe in? What am I believing in right now? And I was walking through bars, and every bar, I would look at every bar, and I would say, I could walk into this bar right now and find a person to sell me cocaine. Like, this is a skill that I had, was finding that person in a bar. I was very good at it. And I was struggling, and I was like, I was at this moment where I was like, I don't know, do I turn, do I walk into a bar? And I turned a corner, and I ran into the first boy I had ever kissed as a teenager, like the first, my official first gay experience. And I ran into this person who didn't live in the state anymore, who had moved to, I think, Baltimore, and I hadn't seen in years. And we was like, oh my God, what are you, you know, we connected. And we started talking, and out of nowhere, he's like, oh, you know what? Actually, I've actually been sober since around the time that we hung out. And he just starts talking about sobriety and what it means to him. And it was this moment of like, this is in this moment where I'm thinking about like queer identity with regard to faith. In this moment when I'm thinking about like drugs and relapsing and all this stuff, to meet first gay experience on a corner, doesn't live in the city anymore, just happens to be there for a weekend. And for him to be like, oh, by the way, I'm sober now, and let's talk about it. It was, and at the time I was like, oh, this is God. God is talking to me. Now I'm a little bit less defined in terms of like who or what. Now I'm inclined to say like, this was a synchronicity. This was like a very meaningful coincidence. That is exactly what I needed at that moment, to be like, hey, you're fine. Like, you and what you are and what you love and who you love and how you love, that's fine. And you don't have to fall back onto anything that's going to damage or harm you because you're scared or worried. Like, everything's fine. It's okay. Like, take some time and figure your stuff out. And it was exactly what I needed. It was this moment.
Well, it sounds like I kind of think of it as lowercase g is what I call it.
I'm sure. Yeah.
Right. Like lowercase g. I think, you know, the way you say that, it really makes me, I really love the idea of, you know, synchronicity being lowercase g, like, and, yeah. And you know, synchronicity is a communication style of this, you know, God that's out there. And that is really cool though. But it's like, but you're listening, right? I mean, I think, exactly. I don't think we want to brush over the fact that, I mean, you're a seeker. You're looking, you're a curious person, and, you know, mix into that thoughtfulness and intention, you are looking for answers. And you're not only that, a lot of people look for answers and refuse to listen to them when they come in.
Totally.
You're open to the answers that come to all the questions.
Yeah.
Which I think is a big point to keep in mind here too. That is really wild though.
So cool. Like, yeah, just turning a corner and being like, hey, this is the person you need to talk to in this moment. And you know, something really interesting. We talked a little bit when we were messaging beforehand. I talked a little bit about the show Hellier, which I watched and I loved, and I was a big fan of it. That's also, I've had a lot of like little things that happened since or post or during watching that show. That also felt like little synchronous, like little moments. One of them, and just the sort of the big thing, is there's talk, and I had heard this elsewhere too, this idea that this entity, lowercase g, whatever you want to call it, the sort of this energy or this feeling is sort of very attached to the idea of liminality. And like,
oh, I'm so glad you brought this up. I mean, we're right on tune, because
yeah,
that was the next thing I was going to bring up with,
oh, cool, right,
in our conversation. So let's hit me with it, baby.
Well, so it's a thing that I think about. It's, you know, being a non-binary trans person, this idea, especially, I mean, any sort of trans person, but I think there's something especially liminal about non-binary identity, because so much of it is you figure out at some point, you have little inklings that like, maybe I am not this thing that the world and my parents and culture has told me that I have to be. And as you start peeling back that, you start with this idea of not. You figure out what you aren't, and you aren't something. And then so much of it, though, and I would say the experience that is meaningful and sort of beautiful to me is figuring out what the is, right? What you are. And how that wants to express, because you know, there's no singular version of non-binary identity. A lot of people would have you believe that non-binary identity is just, you know, Tilda Swinton in a well-cut suit. And that's sort of, you know, culture has this very specific idea of femme-leaning androgynous, very thin, very white, like this is what androgyny has to be. But I would say the more you sort of dig into what non-binary identity is or can be, you realize there's no one thing it is by default. And that really gives you the space to figure out how you want to express, how you want to exist, how you want to, even in terms of how you want to present, how you want to exist. And I think there's something deeply, like, almost permanently liminal about that, about this sort of this quest of how do I want to be? How do I want to be? How do I want to present? What feels right to me? What's just fun? What's natural and all this? And I think about potentially the way that I've sort of been drawn to questioning things and finding answers and trying to figure out what exists. Because it never, you know, I was never going to land on atheist is what I'm saying. I was never going to land on not believing in anything.
You never, like if we were to like happen upon one another on the street one day and you started proselytizing atheism, I would be like, I've jumped timelines.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'd have to be checked for a fever probably.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're never going to land on atheism.
But I think that the belief in something, you know, and mm-hmm. the fact that like, am I drawn to something, or is something drawn to me existing, or am I sort of drawn to the idea of things? And I think having an identity that is extremely sort of by definition liminal was really a really meaningful part of that entire experience of sort of viewing and consuming the media. It got me thinking about a lot of stuff, and I had a bunch of little synchronicities too.
It's so funny. Yeah. I wanted to talk about this today.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And I wanted to specifically talk about liminality and things like that. And I had this moment, and before we even started, you know, we had a brief conversation before we were going. Before we even started, like I don't know. Maybe I should spare the details. I was using the bathroom, right? Sure. As most people do. And I'm thinking about my day, and I'm thinking, you know what? This is going to come up today. And I'm thinking about, and I'm thinking about, this is the thoughts I'm having.
Yeah.
Liminality is anti-structural. And I'm going to send you a holiday gift. So I'm going to get your address before we leave, just in case you don't have this thing. And, you know, I don't think you do. So I'm just going to take a chance. And if I end up sending you something, now you have a second, an extra one.
That's very sweet.
You can pass it on to someone else.
Okay.
I'm thinking about structure, and I'm thinking specifically about the structure of language.
Yeah.
I love the history of language, and language is a growing, changing, evolving creature. It's alive.
Yeah.
And, you know, people from 400 years ago spoke a certain way. And if you were to speak that way now, you'd be considered stupid or don't know how to talk. When they were when 400 years ago, that would have been the most sophisticated way to speak.
Totally.
And I'm thinking specifically about pronouns. And as children, we are raised inside the English language structure, right? And, you know, it's very visual attachment. See this person of a man? That's him. See this person of a woman? That's her. And I think a lot of people struggle without even realizing it.
Totally.
Their fight against, you know, is non-binary nomenclature, is that a good way to say it? Or just words and...
Sense.
Yeah. Their struggle against, or their fight, their resistance against it maybe is they don't even realize they're fighting against a structure that was built inside of them at a very young age.
Totally.
That was just like, this is how you can identify and this is how you can speak and communicate yeah. thoughts and feelings. And so now when the world is like, we need to change this.
Yeah.
Because it's not accurate. It's, you know, they're reacting against, well, this is the structure that's been built inside of me to be able to even totally. Communicate and think properly. So how could I do that? This is,
yeah.
this is ridiculous. When in fact, it's just a process that takes time. You know, especially for like a cis white man like myself, you know, sure. it's been a process for me and I have, yeah. I've screwed up and I've, you know,
yeah.
yeah. And it happens or it has happened for me, but the idea that it is so anti-structural
yeah.
And the liminality of it too is, to me, it's very exciting.
Definitely.
Because I believe that is where the real, especially in the world of the paranormal, I believe that is yeah. where the real, that's where the real juice is.
Yeah,
it's
definitely.
That space in between, the in-betwixt. And the, and a lot of parapsychologists will speak on the fact that, you know, a lot of scientists or psychologists, they don't want to go into parapsychology because of the liminality, because of the nature, the uncertainty, the unknown, right?
Yeah.
And it scares the hell out of them. And
totally.
And fear leads to anger, right? And
definitely.
And so when you are... when you're living in that space, when you're occupying that space, just in what people would quote unquote the normal world, let alone the paranormal sure. world,
yeah.
there, it seems to me that there's probably extra insight and connectivity to the concepts of liminality and anti-structure. Yeah. And there's maybe a kinship in some way
definitely.
To understanding that. Do you feel like this gives extra insight for you or at the very least, maybe that's not the right word. Maybe yeah. it is a comfort level of,
yes.
right?
Like it's that. I really felt connected when you said kinship. I think about sort of the main, like haunting experience I've had. I think about, many years ago, I filmed a web series and we rented out this abandoned office space to film it. It's a silly web series.
What is it still on the internet?
It's still on YouTube. It's called Neighborhood Watchmen. The concept is it's a shitty team of local superheroes. And it's all of the office style stuff. So it's like, you know, mockumentary film, but my concept was no action, just, you know, you fight a supervillain, you blow up an Applebee's, there's probably paperwork involved in that, right?
So yeah,
all
yeah.
of all funny. Of that stuff. But we had an early shoot day. And so I was like, all right, you know what? I'm living a couple of hours away from this office. I'll bring an air mattress, I'll just sleep on set this one time and I'll sleep on set. And so I set up the air mattress. And I lay down and I'm trying to fall asleep. And there's just like that very specific, like shivery, like I am not the only whatever in this space. And you sort of know sometimes. I feel like you just sort of know. You feel like whatever it is, even if it's just a collection of energy, even if it's non-sentient, just feelings, there's something here. There's something here with me. Conscious or not, who knows, but there's something. I'm not alone in this space. And I start to hear little like rat-a-tat-tats, like little rat-a-tat-tats, little like things that are, it's not the wind. It's not, you know, maybe it's the building creaking, but it's little things. And it starts to feel so pointed. So like, you know, not just noises, but like, hey, look over here, tap, 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 look over here. And so I say out loud, I say, okay, sure. If there's something here, tap in that corner. And it does. And I say, okay, let's keep going. Tap on this side of this. And I do a call and response for 15 minutes of like, all right, do this. Like almost like, I dare you. Like, let's do it. Let's do this right now. Let's interact. Let's engage. And it did. And it like every literally, you know, Simon Says, I'm pointing here, it's doing there. I'm pointing there, it's doing there for 10, 15 minutes. And at the end of that, I was like, okay, well, I'm not scared now because we're communicating. Like we are friendly, maybe a little mischievous, but friendly. And like, I'm not in danger. We just want to talk. And that's fine. And I went to sleep. I was like, that's fine. I can sleep now because I don't feel threatened by whatever this is. But there is sort of a kinship is I feel like right. Kinship feels right when you said that in terms of a comfort level. And, you know, to not say that anything, to not say that I'll never experience something that's, you know, a threat or a risk, but to say that I'm not just going to assume that. I'm not just going to be like, I got to get the fuck out of here. Yeah, I think I've always sort of felt a natural just sort of like comfort.
Yeah, and I think that's an important part of, I mean, I think it's an important part of life to be able to feel kinship. Yeah. And, but specifically in the world of the paranormal, something I'm really on lately. I'm like, it's just, I'm on this. I'm on one on this. It's for the last couple of weeks. It is, I'm starting to question, or I'm starting to believe that not only are all paranormal phenomena connected in the details and what makes them paranormal, but all of these paranormal phenomena all over the world are actually maybe even more intimately and directly connected than we may believe.
Okay.
And not only that, but our involvement in them as well. And in parapsychology, it's a phenomenon that's been well documented that the more the researcher is willing to believe in the phenomena, the more likely they are to get results back.
Totally.
And so when you're coming to the party with a full embrace of liminality.
Yes, absolutely.
The party is going to pop.
Yeah,
I think. Right. And, you know, throw a layer on top of that intention, belief, and the openness to, you know, seeking and wanting to know. I think that's like a perfect combination for like a paranormal investigation cocktail for everybody to have a good time at this party. Yeah. And now granted, the spectrum of experiences that people have vary from, you know, exhilarating to terrifying.
Sure. Yeah.
But there's something about our involvement that is, I don't know. I it's inherent in the paranormal phenomena itself. Like we are also part of the paranormal phenomena.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that's like the insight I'm getting here is like, and that's what's so fascinating about living the life inside liminality in other aspects.
Definitely. And, definitely. Yeah, good.
Or no, I was just going to say, I'm curious what you think about like when it comes to like, you know, the how it paranormal phenomena is so anti-structural. And like when it comes to the trickster and things like that. And our society has become so focused on structure.
Yes.
Specifically in the materialistic, you know, physical sciences. And that has kind of really bled into every other aspect, you know, as an American of American life.
Totally.
And it is, I think what we're seeing right now is that we're seeing a lot of anti-structural forces.
Yeah.
Across the board.
Totally.
Do you see a correlation between a lot of these things? Like when it comes to, like, I'm not just talking political and social,
sure, but
you know, throw in even the paranormal phenomena, disclosure of UFOs, yesterday's news of the Galactic Federation, which I'm not really on board with because
no,
aliens are only going to talk to the United States and Israel. Come on, let's get out of here.
Yeah, no, that's not really the aliens that I want. Although the thing that I was saying is like, how funny would it be just to have terrible centrist aliens to, you know, just show up and be like, oh, you know, I'm Schmebulorp from the Alpha Centauri galaxy and I bring you an important message, vote, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I think, and this is even sort of bringing it back to sort of hellier general, but even just some of the things that sort of, I think we're at a moment, and I could be totally wrong here. And I've been constantly wrong for the most of my life, and I could be wrong again here, but I think hellier and also some of the smaller sort of little synchronicities, specifically like spirit box synchronicities that I've had recently, I think it represents to me this idea that even in the realm of media and capitalism and content and all of these things, there can still be that meaning and that push into the anti-structural, right? So what I mean by that, here's the example, here's the two, and I don't really count these as synchronicities. I think these are just sort of fun little things. There's an anime called JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. It's great. It's very silly. It's made by a very silly man who's obsessed with American culture. It's sort of like an inverse weeb, like a Japanese guy in Japan who's obsessed with American stuff. Like all the characters are named after bands. So like there's a guy named Steely Dan and they can't get the rights to call him Steely Dan. So he translates to Dan of Steel. Or there's a guy named Robert E.O. Speedwagon. It's a bunch of silly, silly nonsense. And you watch this show, and this is a show I've been wanting to watch for a while. A lot of my friends like it. My partner has watched part of it, and they're like, yeah, let's finally watch it. Why not? Let's finally watch this anime. And you get to the third season, and one of the characters, the power that this character has, is a spirit photography thing, where he can hit a camera, and it can take a picture of a thing that he's imagining. And it's like, okay, sure, that's pretty cool. Later on in the season, the character does it to a television set. And the way that the information is communicated through the television set is by flipping through channels at a high frequency and picking words out to form sentences, which is how spirit boxes work. Now, that's part of a culture thing. Sure, that's just whatever. The fact that it's in this show that I just happened to like, I'll finally watch this anime that I don't know anything about. That happens. Then a week later, I'm watching this on a whim. I'm watching a horror movie. And I'm like, sure, I've heard it's pretty whatever. It's got a fun monster. Midway through the movie, the monster, the way that it communicates with the family is by taking control of a television set and flipping through channels really quickly and isolating words from sentences. So again, spirit box stuff. And they never call it that. And it's never identified as that. But these little things, you know, anime, movie, these are capitalist things that exist, right? These are structural, consumable things. But to me, as someone who's interested in this and who's like, you know, this is whatever, the fact that it can, I almost feel like the fact that it can utilize and subvert these sort of things that exist even. I think this is a little roundabout way of answering the question. You asked if I feel like there is sort of a general trend of these things, you know. Yeah, I do. Even, you know, even these monoliths that show up, you know, do I think it's probably some sort of marketing thing? Yeah, probably it's going to end up being, you know, Jeep or whatever, but it has people sort of unnerved in a positive way. People are questioning and they're curious. And the fact that that can even, you know, whatever this is, whatever marketing thing this will end up being, has got people questioning and curious. And I think the fact that even media that is otherwise, you know, like you and I were saying before, it's content. I suffer from the same thing where sometimes I have to be like, hey, you can just fucking like something. You don't have to comment content about it. You could just enjoy whatever. But I think, and I don't know if this is a reach, but like, I almost feel like we need it. We are so desperately in need of questioning things. We're so desperately in need of questioning what we imagine to be the way things are and the rules and the way things have to be. 2 years ago, if you say, hey, we're going to have an actual national conversation about defunding the police, I'll say, no, we're not. No, the country is not ever going to do that. It should, but it won't because too many people. And, you know, here we are. Are the police going to get defunded? Probably not. It's a bad country we live in. But more people are talking about it now than I think ever have on a mainstream level. You know what I mean? Like this idea that change can happen, this idea that we can be thinking about positive change, this idea that we can maybe think some force is putting up a crazy monolith that doesn't have to be, it's probably marketing, but is it? We don't know. You know what I mean? Like all of these things, I almost feel like, yeah, they all are sort of coming together at this moment, but I could be wrong. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I mean, That's the beauty about living.
Yeah.
We never know we're going to be wrong until later, but I'm glad you brought up the monoliths too. If I'm not mistaken, the one in Utah was the first one discovered and they think it'd been there for a couple of years.
Oh, interesting. I hadn't heard anything about that.
And I could be wrong as well.
Sure.
But what's really interesting is the one in Utah was discovered, and it's thought that it's been there for a while. Okay. Before it was discovered. But the other ones, like the one in Romania, San Luis Obispo, they were discovered pretty fast, pretty quick. Yeah. And, you know, apparently screws and seams are clearly visible. And then those camoed wearing evangelical
that.
Young guys filming themselves. Christ is king. No illegal immigrants from Mexico or from outer space, they were saying on camera. It's like, like part of me is like, these guys can't be real people.
Right.
Yeah. And you know, like this has to be some kind of ploy or plot or marketing. Like there's no, like this is some movie that's coming out. Like there's no way these young guys, are really that they tear this. They're so afraid of this thing. They tear it down and put a wooden cross up. Like, but then another part of me is like, or maybe you're just still in denial that these people are real.
And you know, that gets in terms of, that's the thing I think I struggle with the most in terms of, I think it's other people. And what I mean, like this idea that we're all one, this idea that everyone is connected and everything is connected. I think I struggle with that because I want it. And I want that. I want to believe that. And then, you know, I go on twitter.com and I post something being excited about Elliot Page coming out as trans, non-binary trans, because that's huge, because he's a, you know, he's a huge celebrity and that's very exciting. And me posting that, I get dogpiled by, you know, 100 TERFs from the UK, because I don't know what's in the water in the UK, but they do not like trans people there. And it's hard for me to say that I'm one with these people, you know what I mean? And I almost feel like it's hard to see humanity as one thing in the face of such virulent anger. And not even at people for doing something, people just for existing, you know, just for existing. And there's such fury. And I think that's the one that I struggle with the most, this idea, like you just said, that these are real people. And I think the, you know, the further we get, it's more obvious, like, yeah, these are real people, that they, here they are, you know, with machine guns marching on a governor because they want to go to Applebee's or whatever. Here they are doing whatever, but they are real. And so I don't know. Yeah. I think that's the thing that fucks with me the most.
And side note, Elliot is awesome in the Umbrella Academy. If you've
absolutely.
Oh, yeah. What a great series. I struggle with that same thing. And what you're talking about is probably, if I had to pick, maybe the most difficult aspect of trying to lean into love and light, as they say.
Definitely.
I have this conversation a lot, and it's when I was in Ohio, I saw a lot of, you know, I saw a lot of Trump signs, support the police signs and things like that. And I transitioned from, I'm like, over the course of being there, like 6 weeks, I transitioned from like, how are these people not seeing?
Yeah.
How filled with hate and vile. And how he's exciting the worst parts of other people.
Totally.
I started to instead of thinking that, and whenever I'd drive by a house with a sign that I was opposed to, I would be like, you need love.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's probably the most difficult part is, you know, loving thy enemy.
Yeah.
As they say. And that's why certain figures throughout history have been so revered, because they were able to love the person who was trying to capture them or kill them or who hated them. And that's some next level.
Yeah.
That's some next level shit, man. I mean, like, I don't understand like how that is like the default gear whenever faced with hatred.
Yeah.
Is to automatically express love back.
Totally.
And I mean, that's the goal, I guess. but it is difficult to look at these people and, you know, and be like, okay, they're a reflection of a part of me, maybe.
Yeah.
Or, and like, what mirror are they holding up to me right now that I need to address? Yeah. And that's hard.
Yeah.
And then you get into like just basically the unknown, right? I mean,
yeah.
Part of me thinks so much of it is the unknown and the fear of the unknown. And I'm curious what you think, you know, the media and society's role has been in giving people their perception of of the unknown and how they should be reacting, whether it's movies, everybody freaking out about alien invasions, totally. Or, you know, or there's going to be riots when, you know, this happens. Well, if Trump loses, there are going to be riots, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, okay, how much are we being fed what we should be reacting?
You know, I think it's hard. I waver on this. I waver on, you know, this is how much of it is there's a vast, you know, conspiracy to whatever versus I almost feel like we've, and I say we, not, you know, not we, but like culturally, societally, we've made this monster, and the monster, you know, this is a generic answer, but the monster is capitalism. So 2016, leading up to the 2016 election, Donald Trump is on every news channel. Every single one, MSNBC, CNN, Fox. Sure, a lot of those channels are saying this guy sucks, but they're still putting him on. They're still the reason for this man's reach has to do with his media coverage. Now, does that mean that the people who believe in him, the people who support him, does that mean that they are innocent of that? No, of course not. They've chosen to ally themselves with a bigot and a hateful, xenophobic, you know, monster. That's on them. And they, you know, they hold that accountability, or they should at the very least. But would they have known about him if not for all of the media coverage? No. Now, is this a big conspiracy at CNN and MSNBC and all these places to elect Donald Trump? I don't think so. Is it the end result of this guy is saying the craziest shit? Let's get him on TV because it's going to get the highest ratings, because the highest ratings means the most money. And that's what the news is about at this point. Yeah. And that's the sort of this money monster that we've made. This idea of, you know, a Halliburton executive or a BP executive who's literally, you know, damning their great grandchildren to live in a world that is on fire, basically. But it's that thing that, like, you gotta do the thing with the greatest returns. You gotta do the thing that makes you the most money, and consequences be damned, you know. And that's I put 100% of Donald Trump winning on, you know, all of the mainstream media? No. But I think it's a huge part. I think the platform that he got, even by people that were saying, this is bad, we don't like this, but here he is for the entirety of his speech. And then afterwards, we're going to talk about how we didn't like it. You still put his speech on for the whole damn time. And I think, you know, again, I don't think it's on purpose for the end of like elect Donald Trump, but I think it is on purpose in terms of saying wacky stuff, getting the best ratings, make the most money. And I think that's everything. And you know, in terms of what we're fed, a Donald Trump supporter was going to believe in some hateful shit no matter what. Like that person was, it's not like that person was, you know, peace, love, and kindness. And then they're like, oh, you know what? I do hate everyone now. You know, that's not a change. But I think the specific, I mean, this is intentionality, right? If enough people rally behind this one thing and this one man as their sort of leader, you know, the power, there's power given to that person. There's power sort of received, both financial and energy and everything. And I think the attention is what does that. And I think sort of looking a little bit back on what we were just talking about before, I think that's the potential power of stuff like the UFO reveals, stuff like little synchronicities in media or whatever, if you're looking out for them, if you're open to them, the fact that things can sort of cut through the signal that things can sort of break through in sort of like a They Live sort of thing, right? Like that pirate signal broadcast under everything, that it's there, it can be there if you look for it. I think just more people have to look for it. And I also think this is a whole other thing, but I think it's dangerous because there's a darker version of it right now too, though. And it's huge, and that's QAnon, right? There's this darker version, because if you think about it, all the things that I love about the paranormal, this idea of you piece stuff together and you're like, all right, maybe there is a greater picture. Maybe there's a whole picture to decode. And if it's specific to me, I can understand it. A lot of those interests and those instincts are sort of encapsulated by something like a QAnon. I think the danger there, and this is, you know, if at any point something I was looking into, you know, fell as hard into like old timey anti-Semitism, I'd be like, whoa, 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 pump the brakes. What are we doing here? And a lot of these people are, you know, fine with the old timey anti-Semitism, and that's why they continue with the QAnon. But I think it's interesting how there is sort of that darker version of it, that like that Black Lodge version of synchronicities, that Black Lodge version of like a deeper understanding of the world. And, you know, because I think you and I both, I think one of the things that appeals, at least to me, is this idea that you look around and you see the world, and that's not everything there is. It couldn't be, right? It couldn't be. It couldn't just be the things that we can see with our eyes and measure with, you know, a thermometer. There's got to be something more there. And I think this idea of looking for those things is good and light, but there's a risk too, because it can be sort of used for that perversion of the cause. I feel like I went on like 8 different tangents.
No, I think I think you're right on point. And I've had people close to me in my life be swallowed by QAnon, and yeah. I at this time, I don't have the tool set and the capabilities to pull them out of that hole.
It's hard.
And you hit the nail on the head with the old-timey anti-Semitism doesn't seem to bother people. And the fact that I would argue most conspiracy theorists aren't familiar and haven't read the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, which is a fraudulent, bullshit, made-up document, that became the foundation for so much of the conspiracy world. Is troubling. I mean, they're jumping onto a ship that they don't know what the ship was even built of, what material built that ship. And that material was built from a lot of anti-Semitism and just hatred and vile.
You know, it's funny. I was actually, I have a friend named Frankie, who's really fascinating character. He's a Catholic. He's like one of the only like devout Catholics who's also like very learned about magic and the history of magic and like how it was practiced, and like has been giving me a bunch of good recs in terms of like, this is a real cool book on runes, this is a real cool book on like the fae, and also don't mess with there's just a bunch of very learned, very chill guy. But we were talking about how interesting it would be to do a study of the various sort of branches of paranormal stuff and how that sort of maps onto politics in terms of like ufology. I feel like ufologists are all over the map. I feel like you have right wingers, if you got left leaning, that's very hard to pin down. I feel like people who are like hard into like magic with a K tend to be more on the left leaning side of things, versus like Bigfoot hunters are almost like 100% Trump people. You know what I mean? Like, and how that maps out. And I think that would be I don't even know how you would begin to do that research, but I think it'd be so fascinating to look like.
That is funny. That is funny because, you know, knowing all the people that I know that are in the Bigfoot world.
Yeah.
The people that I've encountered that I know, I'd say it's probably 50-50, but
sure, yeah,
it's also a very small window for me, or totally, a very small sample size. But in like people who are into magic for sure, they've been on the outside of the structure for a long, long time, and so it makes sense to me why, you know, magic has always been very fascinating and very cool, interesting. And I believe real.
Yeah.
And if you find yourself disenfranchised.
Yeah.
Or if I was to try to put my, I mean, I am the epitome of the other side of the coin, a straight white man in the United States of America. Right.
Sure.
But so But if I were to find myself disenfranchised,
yeah,
I would be looking for ways to empower myself.
Yeah.
To franchise myself. And that's why I think magic is so appealing and yeah. has had been such a big draw to the disenfranchised and the fringe of society. And
definitely.
And that doesn't speak to conservative values of absolutely. Preserving wealth and
yeah.
Necessarily, not to say that there's not some,
no, of course,
you know, conservative witches out there, because I'm sure there are. But yeah, that is interesting how that would all be mapped out. Yeah. Because there has been, Bobcat Goldthwait did a great little short film at a Bigfoot conference, and
oh, cool,
exposing like just overt racism,
yeah,
by one of the speakers who yeah. is a doctor, right?
Sure.
You know, and it's just like, wow, you're saying this publicly?
Yeah.
It's, and then when called out on it, acting yeah. like, whoa, you know, it's really funny to watch this person get called out on it and
definitely
not have any answer.
I've been reading this book. So it's Three Books of Occult Philosophy by Henry Cornelius Agrippa. It's from the 15th century. And it's been a really, because I've just been trying to really dig into magic at a foundational level and sort of like all the things. I'm reading this and I'm reading a book on fairies or like fae society, which is also fascinating. But it's really interesting thinking about, like you were talking about the sort of taking power or sort of gaining power against the status quo. And one of the really interesting things, even outside of the content of this book, which is fascinating, by the way, outside of the content is the introduction, because in the introduction to this book, it's this guy, Agrippa, writing to pastors and being like, hey, this is why it's totally okay to think about magic and also love God. This is why magic is not against Jesus Christ and all this stuff. And at first I was like, yeah, that's interesting. And I was talking to my friend Frankie about it. And he's like, well, you realize that if he didn't do all of that legwork, the church would have basically killed him, right? Like at that point, like the church would have been like, oh, this guy has to die. And it's interesting because you think about, you know, that's a different power structure back then, but like, here is the organized religion and they have the power. And this is, you know, at the height of the Catholic Church's sort of militarized version of itself versus someone who, you know, doesn't have that power and wants to really dig into this idea of magic and what that means. And a lot of what he sort of gets into is this idea that humans can channel a version of the divine and celestial, and the energy from magic comes from, you know, he's calling it God, he's calling it all this stuff, and sort of that's sort of his way of letting these two worlds coexist of you know, religion and magic. Which, do I buy it? Not entirely, but you know, I'm not against it. But just thinking about the way that this guy handles magic and the idea of it and how much of it is very, and this is a messy word, but it's very Western, just in terms of like, oh, well, if you want to do this thing, you cut out the tongue of a frog and you put it under your pillow and this thing will happen. But this idea that we can just go sort of willy-nilly and cut apart the natural world for spells or, you know, things or magic. And I was sort of, what's funny is I was reading that at the same time that I was reading The Secret Commonwealth, the sort of the book on Fae. And it's a lot of the stuff about why we have this idea that the Fae are dangerous and the Fae are going to pull tricks on us and sort of get us, right? And the thing that sort of is impossible for me to separate is like, well, of course they would. Like, we're cutting animals apart. We're cutting into the natural world to access some sort of magic or power or whatever. And I don't think that there's anything that feels, whatever you want to call fae or whatever that sort of energy is, it feels like a very earthly and natural and existing thing. And I think about, you know, I think about like this sort of, this handle on magic, this idea of how to take magic and use it and use the world and tear it apart and make things, and how counterposed that is to the natural world itself and the sort of the magic therein. And like, if anyone is, you know, it's not that we can't trust the fae or whatever natural forces because they intrinsically mean us harm. It's because we've sort of made ourselves enemies of the natural world over the entire course of our existing on this planet. It's interesting. It's interesting though.
That is interesting how you you have both those books, like you're diving into both of those simultaneously too.
I'm trying to.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it seems like great balance in some way, as far as being able to, the way they tie into each other. It is really cool to think about the power of the natural and the limitless potential that we can tap into. And then also how we're like, well, how can we manufacture this?
Exactly.
And how can we become more time effective? And I don't have time to sit here and connect to the divine. I just want to, you know, I want to manifest now.
Yeah, you know, I want to, like, you know, strangle this bird and put it in the water and it's do like whatever.
I see like a really funny infomercial, like, manifest now with my handbook. 7 easy steps. You can cut out all the meditation and connection to divine and get right to the magic. You know, so... That's really fascinating. And Agrippa is a real, I mean, that author is, if I'm not mistaken, there's a bunch of stuff, right? Agrippa out there. What were you going to say?
Oh, what I was going to say is what's interesting is thinking about that. And again, I keep tying it back to Hellier just because, like, that sort of, I think that has really, like, jump-started, like, my, like, re-interest in, like, I gotta do this stuff. I gotta make stuff. That's why I bought the Spirit Box and all these things. But thinking about this idea of getting to the end point, like, you want to jump to the end, but it's not about the end. It's about, you know, synchronicities are not necessarily about the thing specifically happening. It's getting there and unpacking it and seeing where the next one is, following that trail of things. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily about this end point. It's like, where are you going to on the road? Like, what is this road we're walking down? So, you know, yeah, it's like people want to just manifest the thing now. They want the answer. They want to figure out the thing, but it's like, well, maybe the meditation is actually the fucking point. Like, maybe like the time that you spend in your head sort of existing is the thing that you learn from, not the, you know, the spell you cast at the end of it. But maybe it's, you know, it's getting there, as cliched as that sounds.
No, it makes sense. Like, what is happening to you right now?
Yeah.
I'm going to do these things to try to affect a very specific outcome that I believe is going to be exciting and wonderful.
Yeah.
And then these exciting, wonderful things happen to me.
Yeah.
And I frame them as, this is an indication that I'm headed towards the exciting, wonderful thing I want. Well, whoa, didn't an exciting, wonderful thing just happen?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's hard to see the forest when you are the tree.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And absolutely. Yeah, that's something I'm trying to really keep in mind. This has been great. This has been fun.
Yeah, no, I
think, you know, once the world opens back up and you're out in the field with that, I mean, we could talk about all kinds of things more, but
totally.
So we're going to revisit this and continue this chat once we are both able to go out there and start doing some more things. And, you know, maybe at some point we'll have to go out and do an investigation of some kind together.
I was going to say, I would absolutely love to. I think that would be a great time.
Yeah, it'd be really fun. I think our investigation styles will probably jive really good together. You know, it's, you know, never too much salt when you're using a Ouija board, in my opinion. Never too much salt. Let's tell people where they can find you and the, and specifically this completely ridiculous, and I say that in the most loving way possible, the wrestling series that you've got, you're still doing
okay,
that, right?
Yeah. So so people can find me at twitter.com/-Kwiatkowski. That's DashKwiatkowski. I post all my stuff there. So PPW is a very silly wrestling show that I do. Basically I have a used copy of this video game with a really in-depth creator wrestler. So I have guests on to make a silly wrestler, and I'm building a whole digital locker room. And it's just, you know, it's a silly thing. It's a silly show that I could do, you know, in quarantine that still lets me do it. So that's a lot of fun. That's on YouTube. People can find it. It's just called PPW. If they look up PPW wrestling, Psychic Friends is the podcast I mentioned before. That's Psychic Friends is spelled with a Z at the end of it. That's, it's a comedic psychic advice podcast. That's the main spots to find me on the internet.
And then someday Live shows again.
When that happens, when it is safe to tell jokes on stage in front of people, I imagine we will sort of we will migrate back out to the stages and the dive bars and the numerous places around this country. But for now, we are confined to the digital.
And if nothing else, at the end of all this, hopefully we have a greater appreciation for what we've been able to do. And
absolutely,
you know, and in that will shine through on stage, I think, for the audiences in the future, being so grateful to be able to perform, let alone that they'll show up.
Definitely.
Dash, this has been great.
Yeah, Ryan, thank you so much for having me. I had a lot of fun. I look forward to talking in the future about more of this stuff with you.
Yeah, as do I. And, you know, hopefully that'll be, you know, pretty soon.
Hell yeah.
Cool. Talk soon.
Sounds good.